Welcome, everyone, to episode 302 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have to talk about a couple notable injuries, unfortunately. We are recording this Tuesday afternoon, so the news has not officially come out on Ben Simmons, but we're going to talk about him, Jeremy Lamb, and Jaren Jackson Jr. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I'm thinking that come November, if a certain someone is reelected, we have to find a new moniker for me.
That is reasonable. It will stop being funny at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. That was exactly my point. Right. Yes.
But if he doesn't, then you're sticking with you forever.
It's fine. Yeah. Because they're like, unless Bernie or someone else comes out and declare themselves something else, right, which is immensely funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't believe how many people I still have like adding me on Twitter, like, you know, why do you like post as if you're a Democrat when you're a Republican? Like, what?
What?
Really? Yeah, you like, you count yourself as like a stable genius. Like, I'm making fun of. Like, that's a joke, fella.
Oh, God. Great.
It still happens with alarming regularity.
Do they realize you're in Denmark?
I don't think so. Okay. But that's probably the common theme as well. There isn't a whole lot of research being done on who I am.
Or just self-awareness in general, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's true as well. Well, that's our politics, our politic limit for this month, I think.
Right.
Because, my God, wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, as we eagerly await an update from Woj, let's start with Ben Simmons, because we don't know how much time he's going to miss. It is clear he's going to miss an undetermined period of time, is what Woj reported on Monday. The anticipated length of time and next steps could be decided as soon as Tuesday, but he said the injury will have longer-term implications than their upcoming West Coast trip, in which they face the Clippers and the Lakers this weekend and early next week. Brett Brown, before the Hawks game last night, his comments made it sound like we're talking weeks, if not months. Like, it's not going to be a one-week thing. So, I mean, let's start with, if he's out for the rest of the season, that's it for the Sixers. I mean, they're probably going to lose in the first round to the Heat at that point. Even if they somehow manage to beat the Heat, the Bucks will annihilate them in round two. So we don't need to go into that. But what happens more? Let's say he's out for the rest of the regular season, but he's back round one in the playoffs. First, how do you think the Sixers survive without him for these next few weeks/months?
Well, finally, I mean, you get a good role for Al Horford, starting point guard, right?
Yeah. That was the joke last night for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're in trouble. Yeah. I really can't sugarcoat it. I feel as though there are two things that could happen here. One thing is you just completely rely on this half-court offense because you don't have the explosivity and the fast break opportunities with Simmons on the court. And you just kind of slow it down and maybe beat teams to death via Joel Embiid. In which case, it's going to raise questions, at least on Twitter.
Yeah,
are the Sixers better without Ben Simmons?
Oh, it already happened. That was...
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, because he put, you know, he scores a career-high 49 against the Hawks. And immediately that was like, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons keep having their best performances without each other.
Yeah.
And I wanted to reply like, Chris Middleton had 40 points when Giannis fouled out last night. Should the Bucks trade Chris Middleton? Do they not fit together? Like, of course, with one guy out, the other guys have to take a bigger load. Like, this isn't rocket science here. So let's kill that narrative right now.
Right. Well, I agree with you. However, there is this thing that Joel Embiid could get more spacing by not having Simmons alongside him, which could make his job somewhat easier.
For sure.
And that argument I would understand.
Like, yes.
But your argument as well, I totally get that. Like, obviously, when someone is out, the other one has to rise up. I mean, just look at the Clippers as well. That's another example.
Mm-hmm.
When Paul George is out, Kawhi is in. He needs to, you know, he carries the torch, and vice versa. It's common logic. But I think it's more so like how they play in terms of do the Sixers play more freely without Ben not being a shooter and all of that. And even if they do, I think there's a thing that people are going to miss. Defensively, Simmons is a stud.
Mm-hmm.
And most average fans and average pundits are looking at the score and offense and jump shots and all of that and would thus maybe misdiagnose the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's obviously a huge loss, especially defensively. And in terms of playmaking, who do you really have there as your backup? Like, I was kidding before with Horford, but like, is he the best playmaker now on the team?
Yeah, I mean,
or healthy?
They started Shake Milton in place of Ben last night, and then Horford moved back into the starting lineup. Milton had 6 assists, which tied his career high. Horford had 5 in 31 minutes. So I think, I mean, before the game, Brett Brown came out and said it's going to be point guard by committee, basically. Because really, the only other point guard they have on the roster, they waived Trey Burke to make room for the trade deadline acquisition. So the only other guy they have is Howell Neto, and he's out of the rotation entirely. So, like, they are not playing a traditional point guard at all right now. So it's Milton theoretically playing as the starting point guard, and then, you know, Josh Richardson's going to handle some point duties behind him. Alec Burks coming off the bench also handle some point duties. As you said, Horford will be more of a facilitator as well. Embiid is going to face constant double teams, so him having to recognize when that is and making the right reads, passing out of them quickly. I mean, all 5 of the Sixers starters last night had 3 or more assists, which I think it's kind of the formula. Like, you're not going to replace what Ben Simmons brings on either end of the court with any one player. It's just got to be like a whole team-wide effort to replace him. I mean, he's you know, he is the head of the snake offensively, but as you said, defensively as well, he's been playing at an all defense caliber this whole season. It's like
all defense first team, more or less.
Yeah. Like, so that's equally concerning, and Brett Brown said that. You know, they asked, a reporter asked him before the game last night, like, which is going to be harder to replace, his offense or his defense? And Brett was like, both. Like, I'm equally concerned.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say they're necessarily, again, if he's out for the season, they're done. It's stick a fork in them. They're done. I think there are at least ways they can survive. If he's out for the rest of the regular season or majority of the regular season, I can't stress enough how easy their schedule is for the rest of the season. I mean, they lost to the Bucks on Saturday on the road, which is, you know, everyone does that. That's fine. I have issue with Ben Simmons playing in that game at all. I mean, that's if you want to, you know, point fingers at someone right now, it's he came up, like, they say that he got hurt in practice last Wednesday. He went up for a rebound, came down, landed funny, whatever. He tweaked his back, missed the Nets game last Thursday. He comes and plays, he starts in the Bucks game on Saturday, plays in the first quarter. I think after his second shot, you could tell he came, I guess, either came down funny or, like, he clearly hurt, like, tweaked the injury and went straight back to the locker room after he got pulled out of the game. The sideline reporter said that was the plan. Like, when he was out of the game, he was going to go back to the locker room and get treatment and then just come back in. He never came back. They ruled him out for the rest of the game. He missed Monday's game, and now we breathlessly await the news of how bad it is. So it just, to me, it seems like the latest chapter in the Sixers medical staff comedy of errors. Like, how do you, I understand, you know, it's a big road game. It's against the team that you were supposed to be co-favorites with in the East. They're living up to expectations. You aren't. You want to set a tone for the second half of the season. blah, 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 whatever. It's a late February game with no tiebreaker implications. You are not catching the Milwaukee Bucks here. You have an easy schedule. Like, if there is any risk whatsoever of Ben Simmons aggravating this injury, or if you don't have a good grasp of what this injury is, because when he got hurt and went, like, before the Nets game, Brett Brown made it sound like it was a day-to-day thing. Like, they didn't sound that concerned about it. And now it's sounding like, again, weeks if not months that he's out, which is a dramatic turn in 3 or 4 days. So
right.
It just strikes me as, like, so needlessly reckless to be gambling with. I mean, I said before the season started that Ben Simmons this year is the most irreplaceable player on the team. Because, like, Embiid, I mean, last year, famously, they got destroyed anytime Embiid was off the floor. Great, you bring in Al Horford. If Embiid misses time, you still have the theoretical version of Al Horford that isn't washed. They don't have a backup to Ben Simmons. We just talked about it. They have Shake Milton, Josh Richardson, and Alec Burks, none of whom are point guards. They needed this guy. So gambling on his health by letting him play in that Bucks game, like, frankly, they deserve whatever they're going to, you know, however long he's out, however this season inevitably flames out, they deserve it for being this stupid.
When I first saw that they apparently knew that he was injured and had played him anyway, the first thing I was thinking of was this was a team that was usually very, very aware of what was going on with players and their health.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they would rather keep certain guys out and have them miss extended period of times just so that player could get healthy.
Yeah.
And now that narrative seems to be changing. I don't know if it's because they entered win now mode. It likely is, mm-hmm. because at that point there's a lot of pressure on you as an organization to perform,
yep.
which I understand. But this is not just for this year. This is your key guy. Well, one of your two key guys.
Right.
For the future as well.
Yeah.
Like, why are you even dangling or gambling with this at all? Sit his ass down if you're unsure.
Yeah.
Like, what's the worst that could happen? That you lose to the Bucks anyway?
Right.
Look, newsflash, even if he had played and been healthy, odds are, sorry Sixers fans, that you probably would have lost that game anyway.
Right. And even if you didn't, great, you win one extra game. Like, who cares? Right.
Correct.
Again, after they face the Clippers on Sunday and the Lakers on next Tuesday, they play three playoff teams for the rest of the month. And then in April, they have home games against Orlando and Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the fifth to final game of the season. So at that point, I mean, Milwaukee's going to have locked up the number one seed. They might even rest players. Who knows? Like, that's it. They play five playoff teams after this LA trip. Like,
yep.
they should have been in pure bum-slaying mode from now until the start of the playoffs and, like, fatten up on a light schedule. I don't think the three seed was realistically in reach. I mean, they're four games behind the Boston Celtics right now, so barring a total collapse, like, they're pretty much locked into the 4 or 5 regardless. But considering how bad you've been on the road, you're 9-20 on the road, 27-2 at home. You at least need to get that 4 seed, knowing that you're probably playing Jimmy Butler in the Miami Heat. You sure as hell want that game 7 in Philly if it gets that far.
Yeah.
It's just, and you're right. I mean, they used to be under previous management, who shall remain nameless, because he did not die for this. They used to be exceedingly cautious about, I mean, Joe missed his first 2 seasons. And then, you know, Ben misses his whole rookie season, too. Nerlens Noel misses his whole rookie season, which, you know, probably didn't need to happen. He tore his ACL in, I want to say, February. So he had 14 months to recover. But they're like, no, let's not push it. Let's not risk it. There's no point. And I think you're right.
February during his college season.
Yeah.
For people that are confused.
Right. So I think you're right that they have just switched mentality. And I'm wondering... I mean, I think it's all driven from ownership, ultimately. And I think the owners are just impatient morons, basically. But I do wonder how much Elton Brand plays into this. Because, you know, he, as a player, was a routine 2010 guy suffers the Achilles injury, is never the same, comes to Philly, has the shoulder injury, is even worse after that, like he's just a shell of himself. So I'm wondering if he realizes, like, oh, one injury closes your window entirely, like Ben and Joe are healthy, let's take advantage of this while we can. Like, this is why they're kind of speeding up the win now window, even though Joe is 25, Ben's 23. But at the same time, like look at it from the other side. You know, if Elton knows this one injury could change my whole career, like, God forbid, what if this back injury just turns into a thing that doesn't go away for Ben Simmons?
And that's a key word right there, back.
Yeah.
Back injury. Look, you don't mess with back injuries or foot issues.
Yeah.
Like, if you break your arm or break your hand, fine. You know what? That's like the prioritized window of, like, acceptable injuries.
Right.
In a way, because it's just so much more likely to not mess up your game.
Yeah.
Feet, knees, and back. Just as soon as you hear those words, like, nope, sit his ass.
Yep.
No, I'm fine. No, you're sitting down for like a week. Like, let's get you right. Mm-hmm. It has to be that priority. Of course it has. And they didn't. And, well, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I too, am very skeptical of Ben returning because everyone in the know made it sound like he was very, very emotional after getting some news. And that doesn't bode well.
Yeah. No, it does not. And, I mean, they showed last night that they can still survive without him, even against, you know, the Hawks are not good by any means, but they have beaten the Sixers earlier this season. They're going to need that version of Joel Embiid, the one who said, you know, after Thursday's game, he said he was the best player in the world. And he clarified those comments Monday, but he basically said, like, look, I was in the All-Star game fourth quarter with some of the people I consider the best players in the world, and they were running offense through me. Like, I am on that tier. I deserve to be in that conversation. We haven't seen that version of Joel Embiid for most of this season. I mean, Nets game, now Hawks game. Like, we're seeing it a little bit more regularly. And with Ben out, they're going to need that. I mean, they just need to use him to abuse smaller front courts especially, which they'll see a lot of when they're bumslaying. So they're going to need the best version of Joe. Like, they have, I mean, the one silver lining, what Brett said before yesterday's game, is like, if Ben does come back in the playoffs, they were still going to need a plan. He's not going to play 48 minutes a game. So they need a plan for the 10, 12, 14 minutes, however long he doesn't play. Now this is a stress test and you're forced to adapt on the fly and figure this thing out. But, you know, maybe an answer bubbles to the surface where you can say, okay, great, this worked. We can translate to this to the playoffs if Ben does come back. So, I mean, that could be the one positive to come out of this, but it's a mess. And it's just, it feels, without knowing the specifics of Ben's injury and how long he's going to be out and whether they did an MRI on the back before Saturday's game, you know, we don't know any of that, but just, it seems like yet another case of Sixers medical staff just totally screwing up.
At least he didn't have as big an injury as Jeremy Lamb.
That is true. So let's get into that more. Jeremy Lamb, the Pacers announced Monday that he suffered a torn ACL, a torn lateral meniscus, and a fracture in his left knee. He suffered it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he suffered it in Sunday's loss to the Raptors.
And then still hit 2 3 throws.
Yeah.
And look, first and foremost, can I just say the Twitter reaction was so weird to me. So when people were like retweeting him hitting the 2 free throws after that injury,
mm-hmm.
a lot of other people were like, oh, well, you know, we don't have to do this where like it's supposed to show toughness. No, we absolutely don't. Toughness is grotesquely overrated. We've talked about this on this very podcast before. Having said that, you know, when he demonstrated that, I was impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta give Jeremy Lamb some kudos here.
Right.
I mean, that is excruciating pain he has to be in at that point. And then he steps up to the plate and hits 2
mm-hmm.
with a fracture.
Yeah.
With a torn ACL, with a torn meniscus.
Yeah.
Jeremy Lamb, you badass self. I mean, that is awesome. And what's not as awesome, obviously, was the diagnosis.
Right.
like, that is going to take a long time. Like, that is one of those where you actually have to put serious question marks in regards to, is he going to come back at all next year?
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's going to miss the start of next season, almost certainly.
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if we see more than, like, I mean, frankly, I might be surprised if he plays at all next year, but it's probably
kind of where I'm leaning.
Yeah, it's probably at most going to be not till after the All-Star break, and then at that point, you know, he's not going to be the Jeremy Lamb that he was this year, unfortunately.
And it's just such a blow for the Pacers because you just got Oladipo back.
Yeah,
you finally had that, you know, wing rotation sort of in place,
mm-hmm.
and you were getting ready to next year.
Yeah,
where you know, Depot was kind of getting ready to coming back, like his normal self,
mm-hmm.
and now you have to look at this setback for Lamb, and you have to just kind of somehow find a way to make it work for the next, you know, 50 to 60 games of next season, maybe even all of next year.
Right,
and I understand that Lamb was never, you know, a star mm-hmm. or maybe even a full-time starter, but he's a good solid wing who at the very least is a six-man type of player. He's a good scorer, he's a decent enough shooter, he's a surprisingly good rebounder. Like, he just gives you something every single night out. Even though he's not the most efficient guy, he is the type of guy who can actually sometimes save you through volume shooting.
Right,
sometimes that is just necessary, and he comes in and, like, he's got size, and he even contends defensively. This is a bigger loss for the Pacers than people might realize initially.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they were already struggling reincorporating Oladipo back into the lineup. I mean, they lost six straight. They beat Milwaukee without Giannis. They beat the Knicks. Woohoo! Then they get spanked by 46 against the Raptors. So, you know, I was already getting pretty close to locking them into the number six seed regardless. But yeah, I mean, Jeremy Lamb has been very good for them this year, and it just sucks. It really, I mean, thankfully he's not like in a contract year or anything like that. I mean, he's locked up for two more years. So at least the financial security part is settled, but I mean,
and that is why players should go for the financial security long-term contracts, by the way. This is a perfect example of that.
But the Pacers still have some relatively big decisions to make in the next year or so. Because Oladipo, after next year, I mean, he's a free agent in 2021 if he doesn't sign an extension between now and then. Same goes for Doug McDermott. There's still the question of, you know, do you keep building around Sabonis and Turner long-term? Do you eventually have to trade one of those guys?
You do. We've been over this.
Right.
You have to.
Yeah. So
you have to.
So now, I mean, like, it's just, you're not going to have a complete picture of this fully healthy team. I mean, Oladipo is back and playing, but I don't think we're going to see the all-star version of him until next year, probably. Like, the consistent all-star version of him until next year.
Right.
And now, you know, you're missing a big piece in Jeremy Lamb. So it's, I feel bad for Indiana's decision makers in their front office, because you're gonna have to make these choices without seeing how everything fits fully healthy.
So I have two thoughts. One is, whatever happens now, I think the worst thing they could do, and I don't think they're gonna do it because the Pacers are generally a very smart organization,
mm-hmm.
but that is extending Oladipo's minutes to kind of fill Jeremy Lamb's minute slot.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, he's still really trying to get the hang of returning.
Mm-hmm.
No, like, stick to the 24, 20-minute area that he is in right now, whatever minute restriction you have him on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead, you know, separate those minutes into, like, Justin Holiday, Malcolm Brogdon, those type of guys, right?
Yeah.
Instead, I think that's just smarter. And the second thought is, like, even if let's presume that they do reach that conclusion that they have to choose between Turner and Sabonis, and think, okay, you know, it's probably Sabonis that they're gonna go with, mm-hmm. because he's better.
Right.
And they may think, you know what, let's trade Turner for a wing now that we don't have Lamb, presumably maybe all of next year.
Mm-hmm.
look at the center market right now. Look at what Andre Drummond went for.
Yeah.
Look at what Clint Capella went for.
Yeah.
Miles Turner should have been traded a year and a half ago. They're not going to get a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you can at least bank on he's young and he can hit threes, so he's not...
When he wants to.
Right.
When he wants to take them.
But I'm saying, like, in terms of his skill set, he's not as obsolete as, you know, a guy like, you know, not even Drummond or Capella, but like Cantor or like Jahlil Okafor or something like that. You know, he's at least a useful player in the right situation. But yeah, I mean, I know you have long been frustrated with Miles Turner. I'm sure Pacers fans feel the same way. Like, you just want him to take that step forward as a scorer more than anything. Like, I mean,
the defense is there. I have no problems with his defense whatsoever, yeah, which is elite, and I'm always going to like that. Yeah. That's not part of the issue. The issue here is he could actually be one of the best centers in the NBA. And you know what? Actually, one of the best players in the NBA if he just found a way to be more engaged offensively.
Yeah.
And, like, he has every chance of. Like, that last year when Depot went out, or the year before, that was his shot.
Right.
And he just didn't do anything. Now, you could argue, hey, with Lamb out and Oladipo still, like, easing his way back into it.
Yeah.
There are going to be plenty of shots available, big fella. Like, go get him.
Right.
If he disappoints once more, I think the Pacers would be... I think they would be right in if they deemed that they needed to choose in choosing Sabonis as the guy they keep long term, and not just because he's an all star, but because he's a very, very aggressive rebounder. He's by far the better playmaker. Mm-hmm. He's a better scorer. Like, he just gives him a lot more. Yeah, you'll lose a ton of defense, especially in the other basket, which you never want to do. But if the centers have been devalued as much as they have recently, you could probably go out with an exception and find a pretty good rim protector on the market.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, before they get to all of that, they are still going to make the playoffs. This Jeremy Lamb injury is not going to force them. You know, they're 12.5 games up on the Washington Wizards. Like, they are safely in. I think regardless of the Ben Simmons injury, the Sixers are 2.5 games ahead, and given their easy schedule, like, barring a catastrophic Joel Embiid injury, I think Miami and Philly will stay ahead of them, and so Indiana will probably be locking in that sixth seed. Right now, Boston is the three. Would you give the Pacers any chance in a series against Boston in the first round?
Well, not right now. No. I don't think they have the depth. Like, Lamb was a big part of their depth. You could count on him coming in and getting, you know, 12, 15 points a game while playing, you know, at least passable defense and sometimes downright good defense. Like, he's like an on and off guy defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel as though during big games, he does have a tendency to actually be really aggressive. Sometimes he'll even be over-aggressive, but I would rather have that than someone being lackadaisical.
Mm-hmm.
So I think losing him is such a huge downgrade in terms of their depth chart that, no, I if I had gave them any chance against Boston before, those are over now.
Would you have with a healthy Lamb?
I would give them a small chance because I think the Pacers are scrappy in a way that's hard to, like, statistically quantify.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a team that really differs in terms of what the stats say and how you watch them play. Like, they just keep finding ways to grind out wins, you know?
Yeah.
And they may have really tough shooting nights where they go, like, 8-for-27 from three or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just looking at the shooting percentages and you're going, how the hell did they win this game? Because they'll still, in the end, find a way. I think it's one of those teams you just never could rule out. But with Lamb gone, and you would have to separate those minutes into into Justin Holiday and Malcolm Brogdon. I think it's just a little bit too much. If Debo had been fully healthy, that would have been a different story, of course.
Yeah.
But he's just not. So,
right.
Like, what are you going to do? Run the entire offense through the bonus? Like, it's good. He's very, very capable of doing that to a certain extent. But in the playoffs,
mm-hmm,
against Jason Tatum, who is becoming a sensation,
mm-hmm,
no. No, I don't think they have a chance, unfortunately.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, Boston, the starting five plus Marcus Smart, like their top six is just so good that I know the depth issue is their big concern right now. But I think, as you said, Tatum taking the leap as well, a fully healthy Celtics team, I think it's going to be, you know, the Pacers, I don't want to say it's a four-game sweep. Like the Pacers will probably win at least a game, if not two. But right. It's hard for me to foresee a scenario in which they could win 4 out of 7 against Boston.
That's a good way of phrasing it. Yeah, I definitely think they can be competitive, but ultimately this should have Boston written all over it.
Yeah, yeah. Which sucks, because I thought, I mean, looking, you know, earlier in the year, it seemed like, all right, 1-8, Bucks are going to trounce, and 2-7, like, whichever team of the five ended up in that two spot, you're probably getting Brooklyn or Orlando, like, you're going to win that series more times than not. But 3-6 and 4-5 both looked like they were going to be incredible series. But, you know, before, like, the Pacers went through this recent slump, and before Lamb's injury, the Pacers looked like that team that, you know, no one's going to want to draw them in the first round. Like, if you were the 3 seed, that was not exciting. Like, you you really needed to get that 2 to get a early, easy first-round matchup. But, yeah, I mean, it's starting to feel like 4-5 is going to be the most competitive one by far. And, again, who knows? If Simmons is out through the playoffs, I don't even know if that's going to be particularly competitive.
You know what this is? This is the chance that Doug McDermott has been waiting for since he got drafted 11th.
And TJ. Don't forget TJ McConnell.
Oh, and TJ. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
TJ, start taking threes. Now you're going to need it.
He's going to slap the floor, play some good defense. I'm excited for more TJ minutes.
Yeah. No, I'm always excited for TJ. I just want him to shoot the damn three a
little more. Yeah. All right. Let's continue our bad injury news with Jaren Jackson Jr., who we mentioned briefly in last pod since it broke as we were recording. He sprained his left knee during Friday's loss to the Lakers and will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. I've seen some confusion in terms of, like, people think he's definitely only out for 2 weeks. No, he will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. He could be out for even longer than that.
Right.
So Memphis got completely annihilated by the Clippers last night. They are now only 2.5 games ahead of the Blazers for the number 8 seed, 3 games ahead of the Pelicans, who, as we noted, I think an episode or two ago, believe have the league's easiest remaining schedule, or what? I haven't checked. Maybe it's like...
They're going to make me look like an idiot because they're playing a lot better than I thought they would be. So it looks like I'm going to be eating crow on those guys.
Yeah. So how are you feeling? You know, I look, again, there's no shame in losing road games to the Clippers or the Lakers. They're two of the three best teams in the West. That's fine. Right. But, you know, Grizzlies' upcoming schedule, they're at Houston on Wednesday, 2 home against Sacramento and the Lakers on a back-to-back. Second night of a back-to-back is the Lakers, so that's going to be rough. At Atlanta, at Brooklyn, at Dallas, and Atlanta-Orlando, at Portland, at Utah, at San Antonio, versus Milwaukee. Versus OKC, at Milwaukee, home and home against New Orleans, versus Boston, home and home against Toronto. That's just to close out March. That is an absolute monster schedule for the next month.
Can we also point out that Brandon Clarke only played 4 minutes due to right hip soreness?
Yes, he left early in that the Clippers game as well.
It's not looking great right now.
I am very, very nervous about the Grizzlies' chances.
The Grizzlies. Yeah. Here's what I will say: no one expected them there.
Correct.
So even if they miss out on the playoffs, like, it's okay. I'm still going to praise the ever-living hell out of their season.
Yes.
I am. Definitely. Because they played so well. And if this came down to injuries instead of, like, lack of talent, hey, that's even better from their point of view. Like, that's a legitimate reason. Hey, you know what? We would have made it to the playoffs had our second-best player not gone down.
Right. And, I mean, losing Jay Crowder at the trade deadline, I mean, you do it right. to get Justice Winslow, but we don't know if or when he's going to play at all this year. So, like, they still have, you're right, they still have that underlying base of talent with, of course, John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark, Dylan Brooks, who's been slumping a little bit, has been great for most of the season. They signed him to a very reasonable contract extension. De'Anthony Melton, Tyus Jones, even Josh Jackson is showing some life lately. Like, go down the line, and I mean, they have an incredible young core, so you're totally right. If they end up missing the playoffs this year, it'd be a bummer for their fan base, of course, but, you know, it's not like they don't have an exceedingly bright future ahead of them. But, yeah, I mean, I just double-checked here. Pelicans are now up to the third easiest schedule instead of the easiest, but Grizzlies are still the league's hardest schedule remaining.
Right.
And Portland is fifth easiest. So, it's not looking good for the Grizzlies.
Can I complain about something?
Yes.
You know, I mentioned how they weren't using Bruno Caboclo.
Yes.
And I thought that it was kind of silly for them to not play him just a little bit more, even though I understood that his role on the team had been diminished. How good would he be right now had he not gotten traded to the Rockets?
How good would he be, or how much would he be playing, I think, are two different questions.
No, I think, okay, fair. I think he'd be good. Okay. I think we saw last year how influential he could be in games. Like, he was legitimately a good three-point shooter. He was crashing the boards. He was defending his ass off. He was running up and down the court. Like, yeah, you saw some things once in a while where you just like, okay, slow it down, young fella.
Right.
Like, obviously, but he was 23. I don't blame him. I think this is one of those things where you kind of lost in the margins a little bit. I understand that he's not a full-time starter. He's not a great player. I get that. And this is just, you know, Grizzlies fans are obviously going to, like, mention, you know, he's not what you think you are, like, or what do you think he is because of the numbers. Like, he still had a lot of faults. Trust me, I know. I know that he did. But he's still very, very capable of handling a somewhat high minutes load. Like, he even got better and older. I mean, presumably, in terms of the improved play. I would have given him a chance. It would have seemed obvious, especially if Brandon Clark is out, too.
Right.
Like, just throw him in there for 20, 25 minutes a game. What's the worst thing that could have happened? That he just didn't live up to very, very low expectations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never understood why they would trade him. I think he's one of those guys who we in a couple of years are going to talk about as, whoa, why did so many teams give up on him? I would have preferred to keep him around.
He was 2 years away from being 2 years away when he got drafted. So that timeline has passed.
That sentence, I honestly feel as though that sentence has partly ruined his career.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sentence encapsulated how raw he was. Like, I don't think it was an entirely unfair sentiment, but I agree that, like, that notion of him didn't help at all.
Right, and that's not Fran's fault.
Right.
At all. Fran Fraccilla, who made it. Like, that's not his fault. He was just, you know, making an analytical point. That's fine. But everyone's been using that, right? Like,
I think
for the first 2 years of his NBA career, like, most people on Twitter and online didn't even call him by his name. It was 2 years away from being 2 years away, which is just such a hard thing. But yeah, I think he would have done well in Memphis overall, especially, you know, to take some of JJJ's minutes. Like, we have to see what happens with Clark, though. Yeah. I haven't seen any reports.
No, I haven't seen anything definitive. Just that he left early yesterday. But no, today is just like refresh Woj's Twitter page 500 times day.
Yeah, I can't do that.
If I didn't hate myself, I wouldn't as well. But alas, I chose to follow the Sixers, and now this is the punishment.
Thank you, Woj. I'm so happy to have shown you all that support throughout the year. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Oh yeah, that is true. Well, I'll send you the screenshots.
No, I'm gonna admit it. I have a burner, and that burner is our pod account.
Oh, okay, that's fair. Oh, he hasn't blocked the pod? Good.
He hasn't blocked the pod, so I have notifications set on for the pod account, but I am still very emotional about this, Brian. I am very hurt.
Let's not trash talk him from that account, because I would like to not be blocked, please.
I didn't even trash talk him, sir. How dare you?
I know.
No, but my point here about Brandon Clarke, though, is if he's not injured long-term, if this is not serious, and he is, you know, fully capable of returning and playing full minutes, mm-hmm. like, yes, you can extend his minutes from the 21.7, site just loaded. You can probably scale it up to about 32 a game, which is a pretty significant chunk that you can kind of dig into, you know, Jaren Jackson minutes. Mm-hmm. So where does the rest come from? Like maybe Josh Jackson, Gorgui Jang. I would like to see Jonas Valanciunas' minutes get a little bit extended, because you're just going to need stats, really.
Right.
With no Jaren Jackson, you're just going to need scoring, for example. You're just going to need something. And Valanciunas, while I understand that his bigger role defense is basically an invitation to layups, like if he played 32 minutes a game, that dude is going to average like 20 and 14, mm-hmm. which, fine, that's at least something you can rely on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to read too much into Monday's game, because the Clippers, I think, came out to send a statement. They had Paul George and Patrick Beverley back, and they were dealing with some questions about, like, is this ever going to happen for them? Are they a flip-the-switch team, whatever? And, you know, Kawhi came out and said, like, no, man, we got to start winning now. And then he came out in full, like, Kawhi Terminator playoff mode and just dominated them from the tip. So, you know, Valanciunas had a rough night against the Clippers, but I think most teams would have had a rough night against the Clippers playing as well as they did Monday. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, they just need warm, healthy bodies right now. And where they manufacture production from that four spot, you know, with Jackson now out at least 2 weeks, and if Brandon Clarke misses time, that's a good question. I don't know that there's a really good answer for them. I think it's Jordan Bell and Jang will probably end up taking a decent number of minutes. You're probably going to just see some small ball lineups, or Kyle Anderson slides up to the four a little bit more.
It's probably going to be Kyle, right?
Yeah, I mean, because otherwise they just don't have the size to really make up for both of those guys being out.
Yeah. No, I mean, Kyle has started the last 7 games as well, mm-hmm. an average 25 minutes.
Yeah.
So he would probably be, like, the guy you would extend minutes to, presumably. Like, he's a low-volume kind of guy, but he's pretty efficient these days. Rebounds well, plays very solid positional defense. Like, it's fine, but you're just losing such a volatile, and I mean that in the best possible way, presence in Jackson, especially from the three-point line.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has already hit 135 of them at almost a 40% clip. And those shots, I don't know who had that article, or maybe it was just on Twitter, but someone basically broke down the different levels of how Jackson hit threes, like off screens, off the dribble, like in the corner and all of that. And he was just like good from virtually everywhere in every kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
He could just hit it, that little weird knuckleball thing he shoots. It just went down. So not having that outlet, and he was a bailout outlet a lot in Memphis this year.
Yep.
Where do you go to from that? Like Dylan Brooks?
Yeah.
I guess?
I guess so. Like
John Moran can't. You can't ask him to be the three-point bailout option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I and Brooks, again, has been in somewhat of a slump for the last couple games, so that's not helping matters either. Yeah.
Tyus Jones, not either. Like, he's not really a fluid shooter off the dribble, at least. Like, you don't have that bailout option. And, like, Crowder could have been that guy, but he's not there anymore.
Right, right. I think between the injuries and what they did at the trade deadline, which, you know, depends on your perspective, but was at least defensible for some people, gambling on Winslow's upside. So it was definitely a move looking ahead. Like, they were clearly, if they were trying to prioritize getting a playoff spot, They would not have made that trade. They would have kept Crowder. They would have kept Hill. But those guys are expiring contracts. They know they don't fit in the long-term future. They, you know, this was your chance to flip Andre Iguodala and those two guys to get a 23-year-old Justice Winslow that's not going to become available on the free agent market, whatever. So
which is fine.
Yeah.
Which is like the right move.
Right. So they were, they actually, unlike the Sixers medical staff, they can look more than two games in advance or more than a half season in advance and like keep a long-term perspective in mind. We have this young core. We want to build around them. Let's get a guy in that age range. Great. Even though it's going to hurt our chances to make the playoffs, knowing what's coming up in terms of our schedule. And they obviously couldn't have predicted the JJJ or Brandon Clark injuries. But I honestly don't know that they would have changed their path even if they could have.
That's a fair point.
I hope they wouldn't have. I don't know. Before we go, we got to give a shout out to Bradley Beal. Condolences to Bradley Beal. I don't even know what the right word is because he scored 53 points in a loss against Chicago on Sunday and then dropped 55 in overtime the next night in a loss against Milwaukee. The poor guy.
He's averaging 37.2 points over the past 14 games.
I feel like he got snubbed from the All-Star game and he was like, you know what? Screw it. We're not going to win either way. I'm just going to get mine. And I'm going to prove how stupid this was.
Oh, yeah. Look, this is a guy who right now is averaging 30 points a game and 6 assists.
Yeah.
He is getting really, really close to that age and that place in his career where he's basically going to harden it up.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even be shocked next year if this guy was scoring like in the low 30s, like 32 points a game, dishing out 7 assists, and maybe even taking significantly more three-pointers. Mm. Because why not?
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually shooting a career low 33% from three this year, but I'm sure a large part of that is playing with a mostly G League caliber roster.
Correct. And look at the free throws.
Yeah. Career high 8.2 per game.
Yeah.
And shooting a career high 84.5% from the line.
How many players, I haven't really done this, I'm just like in my head here, how many guys are averaging over 8 three-point attempts and 8 free throw attempts? Like it's him, Harden at the, you know, certainly.
Yeah.
Luka,
right.
I think.
Right. Yeah, but not Giannis for sure.
No, not Giannis. Like, that has to be it, right? That has to be that trio. It's not LeBron either.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else might fit that bill. Donovan Mitchell, probably not.
No.
Paul George, if he were healthy, but no. Yeah, no. Maybe D'Angelo Russell?
8 and 8. I don't think he takes...
He's notoriously weak at getting
to the line.
Yeah.
But maybe Carl. Maybe Carl.
Oh, yeah. It's... Either way, a very exclusive club. And, yeah, I mean, here's my question with Bradley Beal, especially given the injury to Simmons. Like, if he's out for the rest of the year, is Bradley Beal going to miss the All-Star game and then make the All-NBA team?
Well, here's the thing. All-NBA teams also take winning into account.
Yeah.
But he should. Let's be honest here. Yeah, he probably should, right?
Yeah, I mean, Luka, Harden are going to clearly have spots locked up. Oh, and I also just looked up this 8 and 8 thing. Trae Young is the other one who has...
Right. I felt we were something else. Yeah. Okay. How crazy is that, by the way, that we have two sophomores in that group?
I know. Yeah.
Like, that draft class, that is going to be one of the all-timers.
Well, just... If nothing else, just because of those two guys, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. This league is in so good hands because of those two, especially after, you know, last year's draft class and this year's draft class, which aren't going to be huge. Like, thankfully, both Zion and Morant hit. That's great. But outside of that, it's like somewhat slim pickings.
Right.
And this year, Oh boy. Yeah. That might be the worst in like 30, 40 years. So
yeah,
like having Luka and Trey come out the way that they have is such a huge thing. And hey, if Bradley Beal keeps turning on this one, I mean, look, if this is going to be the new norm for him, hey, better NBA for it. Like yeah. That's higher entertainment value, more quality play. Like I love to watch him play. When I don't see the games and I catch the box scores, I love to watch them as well because I'm like, yep, dude did his work. Like he's a seamless scorer. And I think it's such a shame that the Nuggets didn't get him.
I know. Or anyone.
That's the one I'm looking at. Yeah. Like, yeah, but Nuggets especially. Could you imagine if they just sacrificed those pieces and you had Jokic feeding Bradley?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's the big one for me.
Well, I'm looking at last year's All-NBA team. So it was Harden, Curry, first team, Lillard, Irving, second team, Kemba, Westbrook, third team. So you swap Curry with Luka, probably.
Yeah.
Lillard should still be a lock for second team.
Yes. Yes, I would be personally offended if he didn't.
Right. I feel like...
By the way, Lillard is 0.3 free throws away from joining that
team. Oh, is he? There you go. Yeah. Okay, so... Kemba, if he doesn't miss a ton of time for the rest of the year, I think he's probably going to have maybe not second team, but he'll have a all-NBA spot locked up. Westbrook, I think now, considering how well he's playing and what the Rockets are doing, probably gets in there as well. But that does still leave one spot. I mean, Trey and Beal are two obvious names to consider. Middleton, I would hope, is considered a forward, not a guard. Simmons, again.
What about Jimmy? Jimmy's also a forward, right?
Yeah. And he's missed some...
He's missed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's missed 15 games on the year so far.
Yeah, and he's been out for personal reasons for the last two. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he'll return soon, but... Yeah, that's starting to add up. I mean, Simmons would have been in that conversation, but I don't think he's going to have enough games played now. So I do wonder if that last All-NBA spot comes down to Trey. I mean, Kyle Lowry will be in that mix, of course, but Beal...
Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, but Beal's going to have a good argument for it.
Yeah, he is. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, he right now, he's just balling out. And look, if the Wizards win, just, you know, a few more games during the closing ends of this season, especially down the stretch, you know, maybe he can point to this podcast and go, look, that Brian Sapora guy said that we would be the worst team in the NBA. Look at where we are now. We're not last. We're horrible, but we're not last.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting close to the season to see who gets that. I mean, I think, you know, five of those spots are pretty well locked up. That last spot.
Right.
There's definitely some interesting candidates. Well, either way, I mean, I alluded to this last episode, and I will continue saying it. I think this is the one hope for this summer to be not a total dud since the draft sucks and the free agent class sucks. Like, if Bradley Beal just decides, you know what, I signed my extension, but I hate it here, and I'm out, and I'm going to demand a trade, like, all of a sudden, the summer becomes juicy again.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys who's very loyal, though.
Yeah.
Like, he wants this to work in Washington, which I give him credit for.
Yeah.
I mean, so I like, even regardless of what happens, I don't think he's going to go, like, the AD route.
No.
Kind of burn every possible bridge that he can.
Right. I hope not.
No, I don't think so. I think for him, even if he's going to ask for a trade, I think he's going to be really low-key about it because that just seems like that's the type of guy he is. Like, he'll go to management and say, hey, you know, what can we do? Like, I think it might be time. I won't say anything to the media if you don't. Let's just handle this internally. Because, like, he's been such a loyal, you know, soldier for them for so long that I think he doesn't want to tarnish that. Like, he's got, like, a post-playing career in Washington that's, like, in a... You know, a TV announcer or whatever, like a TV analyst, if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's been there since he was a kid. Like, he's grown up there. So I think for him, he's gonna cherish that part of his career for sure. Unlike AD, who's like, F y'all, I'm out of here. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder. I mean, like, I would assume he's going to want to play with John Wall and see how that works and see how Wall has recovered from the Achilles injury. But, I mean, Davis Bertans, I think, if the Wizards, like, cheap out, like, if Bertans comes to them and says, like, I'm willing to re-sign for this, and the Wizards cheap out and he goes elsewhere, I wonder if that's finally the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, but you also have to take into account that Wall is probably not going to be the same guy in his first year back. And I think I think Beal has to know that on some level as well.
I hope so.
You know, this is not going to be, you know, the John Wall of old. And, you know, John, as great as he was, like, he's nearing 30 now.
Yeah.
So it might be time to look elsewhere, or do something else. I mean, you know, maybe we don't see the same Wall ever again. You know, I hope I'm wrong, but torn Achilleses are just, those are career murderers. Like, outside of Dominique, and we talked about this before, was there ever anyone else that really stood out as, you know, rediscovering their games?
Right. I mean, that's definitely the concern you have to have if you're Beal. Because even, as you said, I mean, even if Wall somehow overcomes this and is the same player he was before, which, again, you have to assume is unlikely, it probably won't happen next year. And at that point, if you're Bradley Beal, are you wondering, like, you know, I'm in the midst of my prime right now. Like, I need to at least consider my options and see if I can get to a place that will get me closer to a championship while I can still be, you know, can he be the number one option on a championship team? Probably not. Can he be a number two? Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. He's too talented not to fit that bill, in my opinion. But so where do you want to see him go? if that's open.
Removing my homerism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. Always removing your homerism.
Right, because I would love for Al Horford to go to Washington and for Bradley Beal to come to Philly.
The listeners don't know how many fake trades, like fake Al Horford trades you've sent my way that are completely unrealistic. But Brian, you need to accept the fact that Al's going to be there, man.
No, they'll find a way. They're going to dupe. As Vladdy's last gift to the Kings before he gets fired, they're going to dupe him into taking Al Horford for Buddy Hield, and it's going to be great. But no, Denver is the obvious one.
I have another one that is not really brought up by a whole lot, or if it has, I haven't noticed it.
Please don't say Miami.
No, I'm saying Toronto.
Oh, that would be cool.
I kind of dig the idea of Beal and Siakam together.
Uh-huh.
I know that they're kind of, like, they're old right now, so maybe that was a way of retooling.
Right.
Somehow, I don't know what you give up. Like, I don't know the trade.
Yeah.
But if they could somehow swing that, like, my goodness, that would be something. Like, they would have to give up, like, everything, though.
Yeah. I mean, it would.
Yeah.
I guess it could be, like, a Fred VanVleet sign and trade, but if you're the Wizards, why are you doing that when you already have
Wood? Yeah, no.
Yeah. Like, Miami is the other one that jumps to mind immediately, just because they're going to have some contracts to dangle. And
they want him. Like, they've aggressively gone after him in that sense.
Right.
Like, Bradley Beal knows that the red carpet has been rolled out in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
I think Miami is kind of copying what Minnesota did with D'Lo.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I kind of think that's a smart play.
Yeah.
I think that's a smart way of doing it.
It worked for Minnesota.
It did. Power of friendship and everything.
Yeah. It's gonna be it'll be interesting to track what happens with Beal and the Wizards this summer. But in the meantime, we at least had to shout him out for hanging the most depressing 50-point back-to-back game that I could imagine. Did you see after the game? He was like, "It doesn't mean anything because I'm a winner," and like this is meaningless. Like, God, man, you poor guy.
Yeah.
At least you got
your
money.
Let's get him to Dallas instead. That'd be fun. He'll play he'll play with Luka, and Luka smiles all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I need to see Bradley Beal happy, and you cannot be happy if you play alongside Luka. So every NBA player who's upset, go play in Dallas for a year. You'll find your, you'll rediscover your will to live.
Have you seen Matisse Thybulle smile? That's all I'm going to say.
This is true. I actually have.
Yeah.
Like, he you know, that if he and Luka ever get together on the same team, will that be, like, immediately crowned as the most positive smiling team of all time?
You need Kylo Quinn in there, too. He's
That's true.
Apparently can't play basketball anymore, but he has a very winning smile.
That beard. Beard makes it total and very wholesome. Like, when he smiles with his whole face, man.
Yeah, his love it. Day picture still warms my heart this year. Yeah. As I remember
him. Well, see, we ended on a very positive note there. We ended on smiles. That's great.
Yeah, good for us. All right, that is a good place to... Because I was about to get snarky again, so I will hold my fire. But yeah, thank you for listening. Pray for Ben Simmons back. I will be drinking bleach for the next week once that result comes out. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. By the way, before we go, one final positive note. I went to see Sonic the Hedgehog with my son.
Oh, yes.
I didn't expect anything out of it. Like, I played Sonic when I was a kid on, you know, Sega systems and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know the video game adaptations have not always gone smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
I was really pleasantly surprised. That was a really fun movie to go to. You know, so if you have kids, even if you don't have kids who you used to play Sonic, like, go see it. It's actually very, very funny and upbeat. Like, just ignore Jim Carrey's overacting because he does that in everything.
Of course.
But outside of that, there's actually a pretty sweet story in there overall. It's well done. Like, there's fan service, but not too much. Like, it's well done and it's fun and there's action and you're going to love it and stay in the seats. At least until, like, the mid-credits.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
There we go.
Good. Even more high notes. Bye, Brian.
Have a good one.